Gregory Garrett, notice of violation number 07-24.
Morning.
Good morning.
This is the commission consideration of a violation of section 28.2-1203 of the Code of Virginia involving the unauthorized dredging of state-owned surveyor's land within an unnamed cove contiguous to the thoroughfare in New York County. Mr. Garrett resides at 122 Sandbox Lane in the Dandy section of York County. His property is bounded to the north by the York River, to the east, southeast by the thoroughfare, and by an unnamed cove to the west. Area is also commonly referred to as the sandbox, as you can see the extensive shoaling both in the thoroughfare and in the cove behind Mr. Garrett's home. Those same shoals are evident in this 2002 aerial photograph. This is a more recent aerial of the property. You'll note that Mr. Garrett has a pier in the York River and one in the cove. There is a dredged entrance channel into the cove, but that channel only goes over to the boathouse of the adjacent property owner. The balance of the cove is very shallow at mean low water. This is a close-up of the cove here. As you can see, it has multiple slips. A videotape depicting the unauthorized dredging was hand-delivered to staff on September the 25th of 2007. On that same day, well, the video was taken on September the 11th of that year of approximately 2:30 p.m., on that same day, Mr. Garrett admitted to myself and to representatives from York County and VIMS that he had recently disturbed the sediments adjacent to the pier or manipulated them. The video actually depicts a dredged slurry being utilized to hydraulically wash or jettison sediments away from the pier in the vicinity of two boat lifts on the cove pier. That does constitute an unlawful use of state-owned bottom material pursuant to Section 28.2.1203 of the Virginia Code. A sworn complaint and notice of violation were issued on September the 27th of 2007. The notice directed Mr. Garrett to provide a bathymetric survey of the cove by October the 15th and to provide a written narrative describing the details involving the unauthorized activity to include the names of the people involved, under whose direction they were working, and why the work was performed without state authorization. I met with Mr. Garrett and his agent on October the 9th to review the video. At that meeting, he identified the two men in the video as yard men under his direct employ who were tasked with washing sediments back down into piling holes to complete the pier's construction. So I'll go ahead and start the video.
Before you go any further with the video, can you tell me who delivered it to you? I just want to make sure the record is clear to track it back to where it originated from and who provided it to you.
The video was hand-delivered on the 25th of September by Mr. Timothy McCulloch, the adjacent property owner.
Thank you.
It's approximately 12 minutes long. I will narrate portions of it and will fast-forward portions of it. In the beginning, you're going to see first few minutes, the pump is not primed, so I'll real fast forward to a portion of that. The two workers are sitting here beneath the westernmost lift. The green line is the intake line for the trash pump sitting up on the sphincter pier between the two lifts. The blue line is the discharge line. And like I said, at this point in the video, the pump is not primed, so I'm going to advance. Just note, this gentleman will walk up onto the pier to assist in the, I guess, the priming of the pump. You'll just note the differences in the depth as he's moving behind the two lifts. He's up on a shoal now.
Let me get you an extension cord.
No, I got it. And that's exactly what they're doing is because they're down low
there.
And then they're walking up higher. Do you know what I mean?
All right, now I'm going to advance to where the pump is actually primed. Hear the pump running. Stop it just for a second. You'll notice that it's not just a stream of water. There are sediments in that, which we call a dredged slurry. I think the pump is really being used as a water cannon, much less to actually you know, pull sediments up, but there is, as you can see, sediment in the discharge line. And this is the only time it's going to be above the water column, so for the balance of the video, he'll be using it to jet sediments away from the either away from the lip or away from the pier. Commissioner, you can, I'm going to let it run. You can tell me when to stop.
He saw me again. He stops when he sees me.
For the record, the comments being made by the person narrating shall not be taken as evidence by the commission. If you would, please make your own observations and assessments.
You sure you can't do that? Then why would they be doing it?
Brandon, cut the volume down. If you can cut the volume down, that would be fine. I presume we won't hear any sound from these people conducting it, correct? Just a motor or the pump?
Just the motor.
That's fine. They're here today, are they not?
I would like to know if you'd like to see the entire film or just to stop at this point. It's pretty much the same after this.
Members of the commission?
That's it.
Okay. We're soon enough. You can continue with you.
Okay.
Unless Mr. Dan... Does opposing, or does Mr. Daniel, do you have any problem with cutting it off now, or want to make sure we've... Nothing in there that you want, that, okay, go ahead.
Well, at this point, the Mr. Garrett is maintaining that the men were completing the construction of the pier. I spoke with the marine contractor. The pier was completed in January of 2007, 9 months before this video was taken.
This was an NPN, because I was not on the commission then. Was this issued as a result of a permit, or was this no permit necessary pier?
This Cove pier was an NPN pier. The York River pier was permitted.
So there was no card to be turned in, though, that indicated you're determining?
Correct.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Garrett is also maintaining that no dredging took place on site. For 5 minutes and 25 seconds, or 79% of the time, the gentleman that was in the lead was pushing or jettisoning material away from the pier and away from the lift. It was only beneath the lift for 21% of the time. So regardless of what their instructions were from Mr. Garrett, it's clear to staff that for the majority of the time, they were pushing materials away from the lift, away from the pier. At Mr. Garrett's request, I went back out on December the 4th during a blowout tide. Photographs were taken of the bottom conditions 84 days after the dredging took place. Scour depressions were noted. There's the obvious scour behind the lift here. There's also a trough area directly beneath this lift beam, the inboard lift beam, which you can see from a different angle here. There's a similar pattern beneath the other lift, depressional area here, and a scour area behind the sailboat. This is another shot looking just from the pier over to the entrance, the dredged entrance to the cove. And again, that channel is over here, tight to this wall here, and goes to that boathouse. Just showing you how shallow the cove is at low tide. This is a lower than normal low. Otherwise, you wouldn't have jurisdiction. Mr. Garrett continues to maintain that no dredging activity took place on site and questions staff's integrity in the commission's enforcement policy in a December the 6th email. That's item 6-1, question 12 on your notebook. In response to Mr. Garrett's inquiry, staff reminded Mr. Garrett that the use of the trash pump to mobilize settlements represents an unauthorized use of state-owned lands pursuant to Section 28.2.1203 of the Code. In an early email in July of this past year, we also previously warned Mr. Garrett that his illegal placement of 8 jet ski moorings photographed here would lead to an enforcement action if they were not immediately removed. Mr. Garrett's decision to install these buoys, having just applied for them and being advised by letter dated July 13th that a permit would be required before they could be placed overboard, suggests a willful disregard of the Commission's authority. This same disregard of the permit process was also evident in years past when the former environmental engineer had to ask Mr. Garrett to remove these buoys from the same waterway. In summary, no after-the-fact authorization was sought for the current violation, since this is not a dredging technique or methodology that we would support. VIM states that dredging eliminates existing benthic communities and leads to adverse water quality impacts. In addition to the dredge deepening of certain areas, the activity also resulted in the filling of adjacent areas and the direct burial of benthic organisms. Accordingly, in light of the unauthorized dredging and fill activity that occurred on site at each of the two boat lifts and the apparent willful disregard of the Commission's permit authority of a state-owned submerged land, staff recommends that the Commission assess an appropriate civil charge based on a moderate degree of environmental impact and a major degree of noncompliance for both the dredge and the fill violation.
Questions of Randy?
Randy. Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
Long weekend, as you know. Mr. Garrett had transmitted both the names of the two workers as well as an updated bathymetric survey. And I also have a letter that was hand-delivered this morning from Mr. and Mrs. Tiller, who are adjacent property owners. I can either read into the record or have presenting.
I think you ought to read it into the record.
Okay. Letter dated January 16th, addressed to me. Dear Mr. Owen, we live at 115 Sandbox Lane, which affords us an unobstructed view of the Garrett property adjacent to the body of water known locally as John's Hole. We saw the article describing Greg Garrett's dredging violation in the Daily Press, and it was our intention to speak at the commission hearing. The article indicated the hearing date was January 29th of 08, and thus we planned an out-of-town trip around that date. However, we've just learned that the actual date is the 22nd, and unfortunately we will not be able to attend the hearing. So we're writing to you with high hopes that this letter goes on record and serves as a substitute for our intended testimony. We have lived at our current residence since 1972. For as long as we have lived here, John's Hole has, at low tide, been a mud flat with a slight depression around the edge. From our kitchen and dining areas, as well as our decks, we have unobstructed views of John's Hole and all the activity that takes place there from the Garrett property. We have included photos of our vantage point, and I don't have those. We are retired in our home much of the time, so we have ample opportunity to witness the Garrett's ongoing development activity in John's Hole. Subsequent to construction of the Garrett Marina, the slips with boat lifts appeared unable to be dropped far enough into the water to allow boats to be floated onto the lifts, some even at high tide. We have observed both power and sailboats sitting on the bottom and listing in the mud at low tide. At the time, at least three boat lifts appeared to be unusable due to the limited water depths. Over a year ago, in the fall of 2006, we noticed unusual activity in the form of workers using a float with a high-pressure pump. They were working with hoses connected to the pump as well as shovels around the Garrett Marina slips closest to the driveway, north side of the marina. On one occasion, this activity took place over two consecutive days. We thought it to be a very labor-intensive way to move mud around in such an environment. The workers were shoveling by hand, and the pump hose was blasting the muck out and away from the slips. This included the area along and adjacent to their dock channel and west of the slips. They kept a fishing boat there, which would sit on the bottom except at high tide. The boat is now kept in the westernmost boat lift slip closest to the driveway. Most recently, this same activity was observed in September of 2007. The difference is the mud was being blasted from the slips on the other side of the marina, south side. The direction of the flow of the material being pumped was away from the slips and towards the center of John's Hole. We knew there was dredging taking place in John's Hole by permit, though it seemed a silly operation to first build a marina and then dredge afterwards. At that time, it never dawned on us that they were performing an illegal activity, so we didn't keep any notes of specific dates or times. I guess we assumed they had a permit. All the same, we have personally witnessed the activity we have described in this letter beginning more than 1 year ago in 2006. The last observance was this past September 2007. We hope this helps with the hearing process. We each attest to the above as being factual and true. Sincerely, and it's signed C.T. Tiller and Maria Tiller with a copy to Bob Grubb.
All right. We'll enter that into the record. Mr. Owen, for a chain of custody perspective, know who provided you, or point out to the individuals here that provided you the videotape?
The videotape?
Yes,
they're
sir.
Here. Mr. Timothy McCulloch provided the videotape.
Mr. McCulloch, could you come forward, please? Did your wife want to testify as well? Or?
I don't know if it would be necessary.
All right, sir. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Okay. Before we get started, state your name for the record.
Tim McCulloch.
Did you provide the videotape to Randy Owen that was just basically shown?
I did.
Commission? Okay.
It was a CD.
CD, okay. Thank you. Did you have anything you wanted to say in reference to the?
Ultimately, I might. Do I need to do that now?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're going to hear one side of the case first, then we'll hear the other
side. I've lived at 118 Sandbox Lane for 11 years this spring. I don't have any way to show you this stuff other than by photos. So I've got a number of photos that show the cove and the mud flat before any construction was done. At a low tide that's even less severe. Oh, good.
We have a document camera. Hold on one second.
spin around? Hey, there we go. Okay.
I've got other copies. If you look at this photo, what you can see is at this low tide, it is pretty much a flat, just a flat mud flat, except for that very thin perimeter of water around the outside edge. At this point, we had started our dredging where we were permitted to dredge inside the cove and the entrance into the cove. I've got several other views.
Are these photos taken from his dock or the boathouse or up on land?
Mr.
Schick.
These photos are taken from my pier on my side of John's Hole.
Thank you, Mr. Schick.
The boathouse that you see behind Mr. Garrett's house is no longer in existence. A similar picture, just more in towards the corner. That water there, where you see the reflections, is maybe 4-6 inches deep at the time.
Yes. He's going to.
Do you want to pass those? These actually look better originally than they do.
Well, hand them here. I'm going to enter them right now and put a number on them, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Just as a point of reference, this is what the cove looks like now, that same mud flat. And you can see all kinds of channels where any sediment that's broken loose on his side flows down through these streams into my dredge basin. That's the main reason I took the video. This is shortly after the construction was completed. That's the fishing boat that I believe was referred to in the last letter that sat on the bottom at low tide. And if you look under the pier, particularly under the two lifts where you saw the activity in the videotape, there's a significant amount of ground there. And keep in mind also that this tide is not nearly as severe as the tide from the pictures that that was shown in the VMRC's presentation just previously.
What are we trying to represent, Mr. McCulloch, so I can keep this moving on? That it's very shallow?
Well, at one time, the cove's always been shallow.
Yes, sir.
And the reason that I went and took the video was because I've heard this pump running off and on, on occasion for the past year. And I saw hoses drop down below the pier. So I knew generally what they were doing, but it didn't really bother me until I saw them directing all that flow out into a dredge basin that I've dredged, I've paid to do, I've done properly by permit, and that's why I took the videos.
Understood.
I've got...
Well, you've got those, too.
Finally, I've got a photo that was taken the same day as the video showing the dredging going on and the slip adjacent to the one that the video actually captured.
I'm not going to admit all of those.
Most of them are just copies.
Right. I'm having a hard time realizing what's copies and what's not. What I want you to do is to provide the last two that you indicated that indicate the dredge activity. I think the commission now fully understands, A, it's shallow, B, the location of your dredged area, and which is the point of your argument.
Okay.
Mr. Daniel?
You want those?
Yep.
Those in your record.
Would you like to see them?
Well, I've seen them. What I'd like to know is
time and date, when they may were taken, and stuff like that, unless we can label them in some fashion that accurately depicts when they were taken, I would
object
to them being admitted to the record. I mean, we will admit readily that it's shallow in the cove and what you saw in the video, but the pictures are a whole other matter.
All right, sir. Mr. McCullough, can you pull the two out that you indicate that you know what date, what time, that show the dredging aspect of it? I mean, so we by virtue of the tape that we had. Okay. Randy.
All of these were the same day that you rolled out at the extreme with the deliveries you did.
If he can provide the date and time.
When you went out for the low tide, and that's the same day. The same day you were out
there. Mr. Daniel.
I mean, are we going to guess at when these pictures were taken, or are we going to put a time?
He's under oath. He's under oath indicating that he can provide the date and time. If he can't, then we won't accept them.
Those I can provide date and time.
Well, you need to do it under oath right now.
The one set of pictures that he's got were from the same date that of the pictures that Mr. Owen showed you all just a little while ago at the extreme low tide. I believe that was October 25th?
December 4th.
No, they're not.
I can't admit them. That's too different, too much of a discrepancy, those 2 days right there.
It's the same day that he was out and was taken the same day of the pictures that he took, just from a different view from my side.
Let's do this. Let's look at the slides that indicate that you took all of the dredging that you know the exact date and time.
Okay.
I want this record clear. For all fairness to everyone.
All right. This is September 11th.
At what time? Approximately.
Approximately 2:30 in the afternoon. The two men on the slip adjacent to where you saw the dredging activity. You can't see it clear on this, but you can see them on the picture itself.
Yes. What is that one?
That's the same thing.
Same one? I don't need it. We'll need but one.
All right. These are from December 4th. These are all a little bit different. Shows the swale underneath the boat lifts and so on.
What time were they taken?
Sometime in the afternoon. I'm not sure exactly what time. Right around low tide.
I've seen it.
They're all a little different. The others I can't tell you when. This was before any construction was built, but gives you a reference as to what the cove looked like before.
I understand.
Is that all you want from me?
So if that's all you want to provide, yes, sir. I think we understand your concern and your description of the area.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Question.
Yes, sir. Excuse me, Mr. McCullough. Question, Mr. Tankard, member of the commission.
Two questions, Mr. McCullough. You mentioned that the hoses and a pump was something you saw repeatedly during the year of 06 and 07 both?
That's correct.
How many times?
I heard the pump going several times, surely less than 10, but probably more than 5.
Okay. And then when the video was taken, was that a one-day project at that time, or was that a two-day project at that time?
We took the video on one day and took the pictures on one day. It was September 11th, which is an easy date to remember, and my wife actually took the video. We were connected by power to an outlet in our bedroom. That's why it looked like we were kind of restricted on where we could go as far as getting the video pictures. We didn't have a battery for the camera.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Paulette. Further questions? Did your wife want to speak to the commission? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to speak in reference to this that is not part of Mr. Daniel's case? Mr. Daniel? Good morning, sir.
Good morning again. John Daniel on behalf of Gregory Garrett. One minute here. I want to talk for a little bit, and I'm not going to belabor this matter for you, but I do want to talk about how different visuals and different factual circumstances might not always be, in fact, the same to everybody who either views them or hears them. This is a interesting case. And it's a little bit complicated, and it's certainly a case that if good fences sometimes make good neighbors, it's clear that pristine coves perhaps do not. Just as a point of clarification, and Mr. Chairman, you brought it up earlier, the series of permitting in this cove on behalf of Mr. Garrett is a complicated part of this. Mr. Garrett chose to have two piers at his primary residence. As we all know, one of those would probably be for no permit necessary authorization by virtue of his riparian ownership. At some point, he had applied and submitted formal applications to the commission for both piers and had, outlined full joint permit applications with respect to purpose and need and the whole nine yards. When the commission staff asked him to basically choose which he wanted to permit and which he wanted to have as his riparian pier, he chose the cove pier as the riparian pier, but notwithstanding the fact that there's not a quote-unquote permit for that and really just what we might call an authorization, there is significant backup material in terms of drawings and other purpose and need statements for which that pier was requested. So let me begin by telling you who we have here and I don't think everybody will talk, but I want to be clear to the commission that each and every one of them are here really to answer your questions. I can tell you basically what they know about. If you have specific questions, you can direct them to any and all of these folks, and I'm sure you will swear them at the appropriate time. Mr. Greg Garrett is here. Mr. Carl Mertig, who's here, with Kimley Horn, who has done the permitting documentation for Mr. Garrett for some years, is present. Mr. Glenn Nelson, who you've been introduced to in his bathing suit, as one of the yard men, is here, and he can answer your questions about his activities that day. Doug Davis, a consultant to Mr. Garrett, is here. Ms. Rebecca Francis is here. She is with Waterways Engineering. She has performed a visible bathymetric survey as part of this process, and she's here if you need to hear from her, and she provides a report that we can provide to you. And Mr. Don Davis is here with Davis and Associates, who has done the actual bathymetric survey, which has been requested by staff. And I realize that your staff report indicated that a number of items which had been requested pursuant to the notice of violation hadn't been here, and it seems to suggest that Mr. Garrett hadn't been forthcoming. The truth is, with respect to the bathymetric survey, we had on several occasions performed a survey. The staff wanted additional surveys, and it wasn't, frankly, unfortunately, till this morning that the final survey, and I still don't know whether that's acceptable to staff, but since it includes some 1,400 points in a very small area, certainly hope it would be. But all of those folks are here to.
If I could, Mr. Daniel,
would
just
you like
in case,
to swear them
at all time? At one time, if would y'all, those that may be testifying in this case, stand, please.
Well,
I need you to come over a little bit. You solemnly swear the testimony that you may be providing to the commission today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you very much. Y'all may be seated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
We have all heard and we have all read now the staff report, and we have seen the video which Randy has showed to you this morning. I found myself in the unusual position that it is very seldom when you all find me at this podium when I'm not virtually in full agreement with almost everything that the staff has to say. We have a long, as you all know, relationship of accommodation and working through some difficult matters, and I regret that we haven't been able to get there with this matter today, but our views of pictures and our views of what we understand to be the facts of September 11th are very different. And so we don't have that accommodation one with the other that you'll see in more often than not. But we have tried and we've worked at it. Your staff has been, as always, cordial and convenient when we needed to meet. They have accommodated our request for meetings, and they have tolerated our emails and other correspondence and phone calls each and every time that we have that we've tried to reach out to them in this matter. But Mr. Garrett's understanding of what he thought he was entitled to do pursuant to the authorizations from this commission, in this case, the no permit necessary pier in the cove, and the staff interpretation are just two very different things. Mr. Garrett is here today to respond to you for a notice of violation, which was dated September 27th, 2007, which was extended once at our request and a second time at the request of his neighbor, Mr. McCulloch. I'm not, Randy, I keep having to look up here for two prior violations.
I'm sorry?
Can you take this one off? Just hit that thing.
Sure. Well, it's...
That's all right. Let it go. Matter of fact, I'll talk about it. We're here, really, on an unlawful dredging notice of violation. We've heard a lot about a past history with other violations, and I just want to be clear. My understanding is the reason for our presence today is respond to the notice of violation for dredging. Call the rest of it what you may, but there are stories about that as well in conversations between Mr. Garrett and former members of this staff, which I think can address those things. The NOV, which Mr. Garrett received on September 27th, indicates that he took, and I'm quoting to you, unauthorized dredging of state-owned Sebaquis land in a cove situated behind his home, and that he did so in direct violation of 28.2-1203 because no permit had been issued for that activity. I'll tell you that Mr. Garrett objects fairly strongly to the term dredging and the allegation of dredging. In this case, he can read the King's English. He reads 1203. He doesn't find the term, and that is, to a layperson, perhaps confusing. What he does read when he reads that section, and what he does appreciate, of course, is the admonition in that section that it is unlawful to build, dump, trespass, or encroach upon, or overtake, or use any materials from the beds, bays, and streams of the Commonwealth. That's plain English. It's understandable. He also understands, as indicated by the number of permit applications and other authorizations which he has sought from this commission, that a permit is necessary from the commission to undertake those activities. And while there are many facts in dispute in this matter, the video is somewhat indisputable. No doubt, Mr. Glenn Nelson and his partner, the other quote-unquote yard man, Mr. Garrett's employees, were in the water. They were, in fact, in the first instance in that picture, sitting on the Sebequias bottom, and they were, in fact, undertaking an activity. Mr. Garrett would assert to you that that activity that those gentlemen were undertaking was nothing more than continued and available to him by virtue of the authorizations priorly granted by the commission. I've talked a little bit about the two commissions, the two permits. Let me add some time frame to it if I could. The November 2005 permit for the York River, the date on which it was finally issued, was the York River permit. That permit was, I believe, acted upon in the July meeting of this commission. It was then appealed by Mr. McCulloch to the circuit court. The circuit court upheld this commission and Mr. Garrett for the activities which were available to him underneath that, pursuant to that permit. The April permit was the authorization for the pier and cove, and frankly the pier in question in which we're talking about here today. It is important, though, the point that I made to you previously, which is that that pier, while a riparian rights pier, if you will, and under an authorization, an NPN, nonetheless did have at one point in time a full application backing it up. That authorization was, I'm told, by the engineers who worked with that available from that date on until a period of time in July of 2008. In other words, there was a lifespan whereby that authorization was viable for that two-year period of time, and we are certainly well within that two-year period of time. So our assertion to you is that that authorization, while maybe not contemplating directly the activity which you have witnessed today, nonetheless did provide authorization for quote-unquote activities relative to construction pursuant to that NPN determination by the staff of the commission. And as I said, we have people here if you all want to delve into the specifics of the JPA and purpose and need and so forth. They're here and can help you with those issues. I want to turn, if I could, now for a moment just to the dates of, to the date of September 11th and the dredging without a permit claim. A neighbor's videotaped Mr. Garrett's employees in the cove in the water. No doubt they had a suction hose, they had a discharge hose, and it was all being powered by an 8-horsepower pump with a 3-inch diameter hose and a single and a 1-inch nozzle. Mr. Owen was undertaking a routine compliance inspection of activities at 122 Sandbar Cove, Sandbar Lane within the cove. And at someone's behest, I'm not sure who, but at someone's behest, the call was made to the Marine Patrol, and Sergeant Rose dispatched MPO Miller to the cove. His incident report indicates, let me get to it, the quote-unquote type of offense, and I know, Mr. Chairman, you're well aware of the incident report form, indicates pumping poles and dredging. Sergeant Mr. Miller's, Patrol Officer Miller's narrative of the details after being dispatched to the cove reads as follows, and I'll quote, "I was contacted by Sergeant Rose on or about September 13, 2007, in reference to setting of pilings or dredging in a private harbor behind Mr. Garrett's residence in York County. I arrived on scene by boat. I went into the harbor. I saw no signs of any type of activity or signs of any recent activity. I also looked for anyone to interview, but saw no one. I reported back to Sergeant Rose that same day my findings. I didn't get a, and I'm not sure what this is, C1 number or file, a full incident report, as I took this just to be an inquiry. But nonetheless, the incident report from the officer who was dispatched to the area coincident with the activities taking place on the date in question. At some point in time, I think either that day or close in time, and Randy could help us with that, but there clearly was a conversation which Randy made reference to between himself and Mr. Garrett, in which he claims Mr. Garrett admitted the activity. Whether or not Mr. Garrett said manipulated, whether he said rearranged, whether he said whatever, it was probably clear to both. The result and the end product of that conversation was Mr. Owen's admonition to Mr. Garrett that he couldn't do what he was doing, and he should cease doing it immediately, to which Mr. Garrett complied. And to this day, no such activity or similar activity had been taken as a result of the admonition from staff that the activity Mr. Garrett thought he was entitled to do under the NPN authorization could not be done. There was no notice of violation which was issued as a result of the site inspection. There was no notice of violation issued as a result of the MPO incident report. It was only after a videotape showed up some days later, on the 25th of September, that ultimately a notice of violation that was issued for this matter. 2 days later, on September 27th, Mr. Garrett received the notice of violation. I think the single most important consideration for us today, it really is a factual one. I think the question we have to wrestle with is whether or not Mr. Garrett's validly issued, still unexpired authorization of April 2005 would allow him to do the work that is the subject of the notice of violation. It's not whether or not people did it right. It's not whether or not they were foolish. It's not whether or not they were foolhardy. It does indicate that, as the chairman has said more than once this morning, there were people in the water, and they thought they had an authorization to be in that water because they understood and respected the fact that this commission has the necessary jurisdiction and authority over the Sebaquis Bottom. But Mr. Garrett certainly believed that folks had the authorization to do that which they did. As we've indicated, he has a very long history of seeking permits. We may not, or staff may not, all the time think that there are appropriate permits, but that's what the permit process is for. You get requests for activities in your matters in your under your jurisdiction all the time, some of which your staff noodles through appropriately and decides to issue, and some they don't. I have personally been on the end of both of those. Mr. Garrett undertook this activity, as you saw from the video, in broad daylight, in plain view, and within a short distance of his neighbor, with whom there obviously is a long history of squabbles about this shared cove. Mr. Garrett actually had, to be confirmed by a former member of your staff, had the ability by virtue of his property rights to do some dredging in the cove. And when confronted with the choice as to whether or not he wanted to undertake that dredging by a former member of your staff, he indicated to them, no, he did not. So why would an individual who thought he was doing some unsavory activity, as alleged, go forth, do it in broad daylight, when he already had lawful authorities to do it, irrespective of the permit and the NPN, in full view of folks that he knew watched his every move? It simply makes no sense, unless you understand that he, in fact, thought he had the authorization and did not understand or comprehend that it was not an activity which was available to him under the permit, the no permit necessary determination made by the commission. He undertook the activity, in short, because his contractor had done the same. The contractor in this case, Flint Construction, who did the original construction on the pier, had in fact, as part of his construction process, when they created the concave depressions in the jetting and airing in of the pilings, would go back in and push the displaced bottom land around those poles. He simply didn't finish the task. I want to provide to you, and then I want to read into the record if I could, I want to provide to you the, Randy, can you give this to Mr. Chairman? This is the sworn affidavit of Christopher Flint, the Flint Marine Construction, who was the primary contractor on the job. Mr. Flint is occupied at the Virginia Beach Wetlands Board this morning, but it is his lawful affidavit sworn and subscribed to, as is customary under the rules. I, Christopher S. Flint, hereby state that, one, I'm the owner and president of Flint Construction Company, a Virginia Marine residential company, which provides marine contracting services throughout Tidewater, Virginia. Flint Construction Company has been in existence for 9 years. I've been actively engaged in marine construction for 25 years. Flint Construction Company was hired by Mr. Gregory Garrett to undertake construction of an authorized dock at his personal residence located at 122 Sandbox Lane, Yorktown, Virginia, 23962. Three, when constructing the pier located in the cove adjacent to the Garrett residence, Flint Construction Company used air and water to blow holes into the bottom of the cove to submerge the pilings necessary for pier construction. Four, Flint Construction Company submerged 30 to 40 Class B pilings to a depth of between 15 and 17 feet. In constructing the pier in this manner, the construction technique displaced sand and material from the holes that were developed to hold the pilings. The displaced sand and material was located underwater and outside the holes where the pilings were to be placed. Five, when we completed the majority of the pier construction, we endeavored to push the removed sand and other material back into holes around the piling. We were unable to completely relocate all of the displaced sand material as we were not able to see underwater in order to do so. The result was that some deposits of sand and other material were left in their original location after having been displaced by the air and water jetting necessary to erect the pilings. Flint Construction Company had intended to return to 122 Sandbox Lane to complete the task of stabilizing the pilings with material which had been originally removed from the holes in which the pilings were to be erected. However, illness prohibited my return in a timely manner. As an aside, the foreman on the project apparently was ill with cancer at the same time Chris Flint was at a bout with Crohn's disease. Back on the affidavit. Six. Flint Construction has utilized the same technique at a minimum of 50 to 60 times in many circumstances in many locations throughout Tidewater, Virginia. It is customary and ordinary to construct piers in the manner I have described. Flint Construction is well aware of the necessary permitting requirements to undertake activities in the subaqueous bottom of the Commonwealth. We obtain approximately 100 permits or authorization to construct piers annually. We have undertaken numerous marine construction jobs for which permits have been necessary. Having the authorizations necessary to undertake the pier construction of the Garrett property, Flint Construction Company never imagined that the final steps of that construction activity to stabilize the pilings for the pier were somehow an activity not contemplated but part of the construction authorized by the Virginia Marine Resources Commission. Flint Construction did not at any time remove any sediment, sand, or other material from the bottom of the cove located at 122 Sandbox Lane in Yorktown, Virginia. That, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, is the sworn affidavit of the contractor for this job. I want to add one other document, if I could, to your record, which is another affidavit from an individual who has a little bit of experience in marine contracting and also a little bit of experience with this commission. This is the affidavit of a former member of this commission, Mr. Gordon Burkett. And I will, if you don't mind, read that into the record as well. I, Gordon M. Burkett, hereby state that, one, I was the co-owner and operator of a major marina for over 28 years. During the course of those 28 years, I performed virtually all of the maintenance, pier and dock repair, and marine construction associated with the operation of the marina. In addition to the ownership and operation of a marina for 28 years, I've been in the construction and repair of docks for 10 additional years. I was privileged to serve on the Virginia Marine Resources Commission for a period of 9 years. Four, in my tenure as a marine contractor and marina operator, we had used the process known as, quote, resetting or, quote, washing back in around pilings to stabilize and secure a piling that had been displaced as a result of new construction or dock repair. I have participated in the use of that construction activity literally hundreds of times. I believe it is standard practice. I believe that the washing back in of piles in order to stabilize them in the construction of a pier is an ordinary and customary practice in marine construction industry and one which is used regularly throughout Tidewater and other parts of the Commonwealth. Seven, under normal circumstances, a sizable pump and hose is used for the jetting process and to replace displaced material as a result of that jetting of a pile. It is my understanding that in the washing back or resetting of the piles associated with construction activity at Mr. Greg Garrett's residence at Sandbox Lane in Yorktown, Virginia, that an undersized 8-horsepower pump with 1-inch hose would likely clog on numerous occasions and need to be removed from its submerged state into the air to clear the hose and pump from pump shell and other debris which would clog the hose. Eight, I do not recall during my 9 years of tenure as a member of the Virginia Marine Resources Commission any matter with a similar factual circumstance where an individual had been found, his word, guilty of quote-unquote dredging. So I share those with you, one, because I think clearly Chris Flint was familiar with the intimate details of the construction of the dock at Sandbox Lane, and secondly, Mr. Burkett understands, I think, both the marine construction industry as well as, no doubt, his service here on the commission. I want to go real quickly, and I really don't mean to take all this time, but I want to go real quickly and just point out a couple of things, if I could. As I indicated, you got this morning, or staff got, the bathymetric survey from Don Davis and Davis Associates. He's here. He can speak to you about it. I do want to read to you his cover, his transmittal of that survey. Not in whole, but at the second two paragraphs, and I think maybe, I don't know, have you provided that to them? Okay. Approximately, just beginning with the second full paragraph on the single page, approximately 1,400 soundings were taken between January 7 and January 15, 2008, and are represented by the attached as-built plan. Because of the abnormally dense surround soundings grid, the plan is drawn at a scale of 1 inch to 20 foot. The vertical datum utilized is referenced in the National Geodetic Vertical Datum, parentheses NGND 1929, which is the vertical datum referenced in the FEMA flood hazard boundary maps. Based on the reference soundings and my three previous sounding surveys revised through October 23, 2007, I did not find an indication of dredging or excavation in the cove. Of course, an open pile pier structure has been constructed, which is detailed on the sounding survey. And if necessary, please contact me and so forth. And as I've indicated, he's here and available to you this morning. I mentioned to you that in addition to the work which Mr. Davis was doing at the request of the staff under the notice of violation, Waterway Surveys and Engineering Limited also performed at Mr. Garrett's request a survey, a visible survey and bathymetric observation. And I want to just read a brief piece from that, and the full report's available to you. Talking about depressions around piles. Conical depressions surrounded most of the pier piles along the main structure and the finger piers. While the depressions did vary in size, they were typically 2 to 4 foot in diameter and 0.5 to 2 feet in depth at the pole, at the pile, sorry. In many cases, the depressions were connected, forming shallow troughs under the piers. The depressions were formed during pier construction when the piles were jetted into the silty substrate. A few of the piles, no specific areas documented, did not support conical depressions, and the bottom was relatively flat around the pile. The bottom appeared stable when there were no recent signs of disturbance. It was assumed that the depressions around those piles had been filled in sometime during construction of the pier. And that's a January 10th report. I don't know that this would show up on the equipment. Will this show up on here?
Yeah.
I just want to show it just to give you some idea of the degree of effort that was undertaken to try to determine disruption and other dredging or activities at the in the cove. This is what 1,400 points in the area we're talking about looks like. He has a.
We've got it up here.
He's got
Daniel.
It. Okay.
Yes, sir.
2 by. This is a takes a 2 foot by 3 foot piece of paper. Just real quickly, and then I'm gonna sit down. Just want to talk a little bit about most of this.
Big one. Get the big one from Mr. Garrett, please. That's fine. Sorry, Mr. Dan, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow. I'm trying to get the evidence straight. Go ahead, sir.
Just want a couple of comments, and most of the thing I think I've probably already mentioned, but with regard to the staff report, there's a quote in the staff report where when we're talking about whatever the conversation between Randy and Mr. Garrett was, where he told Randy that he'd been doing some activity in the neighborhood of the pier where it's indicated that he quote-unquote manipulated the bottom sediments. Mr. Garrett doesn't necessarily remember the conversation that way. I'm not sure that's terribly important for the purposes of your decision, but nonetheless, different conversation, no doubt a conversation, but what the words were, we don't know. Your staff suggests that the notice of violation was issued and constituted a willful intentional violation of Chapter 12 and Article 2. I just ask you to remember that it took basically three events before any notice of violation was issued. One, site inspection by your staff. Two, the visual inspection by the MPO officer, and then finally a videotape. And it was that point in time which a notice was issued. There's some, and I apologize a little bit for this, there's some suggestions that we have been, and I'll take some blame for this, for Cal's return and not responding to requests for the staff. We didn't provide a written summary, but we frankly thought that our numerous meetings and conversations in which we had expressed these basic views I've expressed to you today were, in fact, adequate to respond to that. The bathymetric survey was done not once, not twice, but three times as a result of requests for additional information, and so that was perhaps as not as timely. And I'm not sure, frankly, why the names of the two individuals didn't get here. They were certainly sent to me earlier. If I failed to hit send and get them on, my bad. I do know that there's a recollection by Mr. Murtagh and Mr. Garrett that those names were provided in the October 12th meeting. And I don't want to belabor all this, but I do want you all to understand that this has not been an exercise in foot dragging or trying not to be cooperative with the staff to get them the information they need. And finally, the individual is here today, not so much because we want to put him on to talk to you, but to make him available to you all, should you all have questions for him. There's a suggestion that the pier was completed in January of 07. I don't know what it was that would have indicated that, perhaps a phone call or something or some surmise or maybe more than that with the staff. What we do know is that the ability to continue construction and conclude construction didn't expire until July of 2008. Just want to hit one other high point. There's a suggestion, and it's not a suggestion, it says that the Cove Pier was for the use of Mr. Garrett's vessels, of which there are many, for severe storm events only. That, if you went back to the purpose and need statements in the JPA, that's not what it says. I understand that those are not the basis upon which the pier was issued, but it is certainly evidence of what was indicated the use of the pier to be. There's no doubt that Mr. Garrett does move vessels from the York River Pier to the Cove Pier, and primarily during storm events. But why anybody would think it's a condition of the pier that it only be used in severe storm events is somewhat beyond me, because I don't know who we would get to tell us. I mean, what severe weather in one person's mind may not be severe weather in another's. So I don't know what the definition of severe weather only might be. So it just makes no sense given the size of investment and the activities that Mr. Garrett had undertaken for this authorized pier, that he would in fact limit its use in such a fashion. I'm going to we've heard some at the close of Brandy's staff report, some indications of quote-unquote past violations with mooring buoys and things like that. I don't really know about those things. I know that they're not part of the notice of violation or the activity for which we've been asked to appear before you today. I do know that there have been conversations between former commission staffer and Mr. Garrett about mooring buoys and so forth, and I don't believe that there's any evidence that after having been told he couldn't do whatever he was doing with mooring buoys and jet skis, that he intentionally went out there and did it in the face of having been told not to. That would simply just not be in keeping with character. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'm going to stop. I know Mr. Garrett would like to say a few words to you, and then I might come back up for a moment if that's okay.
Sure. Question first of counsel before.
I'd just like to see the large survey.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tankard, then Mr. Robbins.
I have a couple questions, Mr. Daniel. You said this issue in your mind, given your review, the single most important question is that whether or not Mr. Garrett was and his men, his yard men, were working in the context of the permit that they were given. correct?
Yes, sir.
But how do you resolve Mr. Owen's observation that 78% of the work that was viewed in the video was outside the scope of the permit?
Well, it's a really good question. It may be better, frankly, answered by the yard man who's here, but I'll give you, since you asked me, I'll give you my take on it. There's a sense of you've expended a large sum of money to build this pier. Your contractor is not able to get back after repeatedly asking him to come back and finish the job. You find yourself a little bit frustrated, and you have, by virtue of your normal business, individuals who think they can go do a job, and you say, go down there and get you a pump and do it. Clearly, they were using not great equipment, certainly not the kind that Flint or somebody else might use in undertaking the activity. And I frankly, other than the fact that I don't think they'd ever undertaken that kind of activity before, I don't think they really had a great sense of what they're doing. I'm not being disparaging of the individual who may come up here afterwards. It's just what it appears to me. I don't know why. If they know they're being videotaped, and the evidence before you was that they knew they were being watched, why they would sit there with a hose and point it out into the middle of the cove? That any other explanation other than the fact that they simply, you know, were trying to figure out how to use equipment they'd never used before to move material to a place where they'd been directed to put it around the concaves in the pile just doesn't make any sense to me.
Further questions, Tiger? Ms. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was along the same lines. Counselor, you've suggested, you've argued that the work that was done, that is backfilling around the pilings, was essentially standard operating procedure. You submitted a couple of affidavits to that effect. You've argued that the work being done around those pilings was within the scope of the NPN authorization for the pier construction project. And you've argued that there are basically no significant impacts in the bathymetric survey. That is, no significant environmental impacts or evidence of dredging per se as we think about dredging. And I was going to ask the same thing. How would you have us treat that portion of the work that was done if we go with your arguments on the standard operating procedure, that the work was within the scope of the NPN authorization? How would you have us treat those portions of the sediment that were clearly moved in the video, for example, that are outside of the scope of the of the impact footprint that was contemplated by the authorization? And again, it appears in the bathymetric survey that there's no significant evidence of impacts per se, and yet we see these men moving around sedimentation. Are we to simply say that was work that was done haphazardly? How would you address that?
First, just for clarification, I'm not suggesting it's routine and ordinary and customary. That's the affidavits for people who are in the business. I don't do that, so I don't know whether it was ordinary or customary. I believe folks who swear in an affidavit that it is. As to the bathymetric survey, was asked for by the staff. It's the document and the information that I think is supposed to help us all understand what was the impact, if any, to the cove as a result of the activity, and it speaks for itself. I'm not sure, Mr. Robbins, how to say, how would I have you treat the activity other than as I've suggested to Mr. Robbins. I think if there had been adequate equipment and adequate professionals who had come back in a timely way, you would have seen two quote-unquote yard men in the cove sitting on the bottom trying to wrestle a 3-inch hose with a 1-inch nozzle to get it to move sediment underneath the water. I don't have a great explanation. I might have a suggestion if there was folks thought there was some merit to what we have said to you today. And I'll be, I don't know, at the end, in the end analysis, exactly what this is. I'll tell you what I clearly don't think it is. And I don't think this is the blatant, total disregard of this commission and its authority over the people's bottoms in this Commonwealth for one's own personal gain, if you will. We have a history here of coming to this commission for authorization. She may not like what they ask for, but it happens all the time, but at least they do come and ask. I think that we have somewhat of a misunderstanding, perhaps, between what one thought they were entitled to do and what this commission staff, who's charged with making sure people do the right thing, may have thought they would do. We know it's not going on now, but we also know that there's additional construction activity that needs to be take place by virtue of making sure the pile's set and the concave depressions around the pile. And some might suggest that tidal influence would normally take care of that for you. If you want to ask him, Mr. Mertig will tell you that in this cove, the tidal, there is, you don't have that washing back and forth. So Mother Nature is not accomplishing in the cove around the pilings and the concaves that which it might accomplish in the York River, where you had all sorts of other currents and movements and other things. But, you know, I think Mr. Garrett needs to know how he can finish. I think staff has ideas about what it is that might be able to be done to help him finish, whether that's don't do anything, or you may be able to do this, that, or this under these circumstances with this level of expertise. And certainly if the will of this commission would be to put all of us out there, not all of you all, it's cold, but to put the staff and Flint Construction and Mr. Garrett and whoever else out there to determine what, if anything, might be able to be done in the future to complete the construction activity. That would obviously be helpful to us. It would be respectful of the current commission's jurisdiction, and it certainly would be respectful of the subaqueous bottom, which is, of course, the reason we're here. So in terms of how I might ask you to treat it, that might be it.
Thank you. Mr. Daniel, what was the name of the gentleman that was in the bathing suit? Mr. Nelson, is that it?
I knew you'd notice that. His name is Mr. Glenn Nelson.
Mr. Nelson, come forward, please. You've been placed under oath. Maria. Tell me about that day, what you were directed to do, what you offered to do, and exactly what you undertook, and what you thought you were undertaking.
The pilings had holes around them.
How big?
Some of them 4 foot in diameter, some of them 2 foot. It buried all the way through the pier construction through, you know, the different fingers on the pier itself. Mr. Garrett had asked, you know, to get in touch with Chris and his crew to come out and finish up.
Could I ask you to get in touch with Chris?
Right. I do a lot of the calling from Mr. Garrett.
All right.
In doing so, you know, it kept getting put off, couldn't come out, busy doing this and doing that. But long story short, they didn't come out. Weather was, you know, getting towards the cold end of the season. And Mr. Garrett asked me if, you know, I could do anything about it. We had the pump.
He asked you. You didn't offer to do it. He asked you to do it.
He asked, did I know of any way that we could do it? You know, and we had the pump already, you know, on premises that we used to do the duct blinds, clean the duct blinds off, wash them down. So I took the pump, necked it down from a 3-inch line to a 2-inch line with a gate valve.
Mm-hmm.
The video shows us the gentleman in the water, the other worker in the water, facing outwards. I had no idea whatsoever what that pump was going to do once we cut it on. being that the bottom is nothing but soft sediment, whether or not it was going to look like a cartoon character out there throwing us around. I told the gentleman, Scott, face it outside. Let's not get underneath the pier until we are absolutely sure what we could do as far as that. The film, I think, is something like, you know, maybe 10 minutes long. I don't know. But in doing so, the pump constantly was getting clogged up. If you were seeing the whole video, you'll notice I pick up one end of the hose and try to, you know, move the sediment. In opening up the valve is just to clear the line itself facing it outward. The muck that or the sediment that is being pulled up constitutes the volume of weight that the hose, after it's filled up, just pulling it back down. We tied it up, kept tying it up, and trying to keep. Right. You know,
what caused you to stop the activity after the 10-minute period of time? Why did you stop?
We didn't stop.
You didn't?
We worked underneath there probably 2 hours, you know, give or take. What you saw was just a small, when we started, you know, after lunch, you know, setting up and doing it. We continued to, you know, wash what we could in a futile effort, you know, to put the sediment back around the pilings.
Had you ever done this around pilings like this before?
I had asked Ted, one of the yard, or not the dock builders, what he would do or what they do, and he said, you know, we get our pump and wash it. I said, well, what size is your pump? And he said, 185 horsepower. Well, obviously, you know, we didn't have a 185 horsepower pump. We had an 8 horsepower pump.
Any follow-up to my question? Mr. Robbins?
Several questions, Mr. Chairman. Did you on that day or any time prior work on the other side of the dock with the pump? In other words, on the driveway side of the pier?
We worked on spraying down the lift, the bottoms of the lift, which collect mud, and also around the top of the pilings, blowing down the barnacles and that type of stuff.
But you didn't actually do any work in the bottom sediment?
No.
Using the pump on the other side of the dock. Okay, and the other question I had was related to just trying to get an understanding of why the discharge end of the hose was pointed away from the boat lift, and then were you trying to use the discharge end of the hose to move sediment around, or were you trying to transport sediment using the inlet side of the pump?
The discharge side of the hose, the blue hose that you saw, was actually used to wash, trying to wash it back into the piling. Why we were facing outward is right when, at that time, we had just started, not, you know, shortly before then, and trying to get a feel. Scott, the other gentleman that was working with us, or working with me, had never really been on the end of a fire hose, nor could I explain to him what the volume, you know, would be going back. One of us had to be priming the pump or get the pump primed, and the other one had to hold the hose until we got an adequate feel for what we were doing.
So as a follow-up, if I may, Mr. Robbins, the best-case scenario you could have hoped for was the discharge hose to have clean water coming out of it in order to wash back around those pilings.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right. You may get, if you put that hose or the green hose that's down there, the sediment ranges maybe from 6 to 18 inches of soft sediment. Below that's nothing but shell. And, you know, as soon as the pump picks up any shell or anything, it clogs up and stops up. The idea of bringing it out of the water and opening up the whole valve washes that through. It doesn't give any restriction that we've already created by putting a 1-inch hose on it, a 3-inch line.
Okay. Further questions? Mr. Schick?
Yeah, we saw activity with the blue end of the hose, which is the part that washes. But I didn't see anybody moving around the green side.
It's in at the end of that film.
Basically, you just had that overboard. And was anybody handling that end, or was it?
No, it was tied up and it was mounted.
You had it tied to the dock.
had it tied to one of the piling holes to give us some volume of water rather than suck it. You know,
and how far off the bottom was the, typically on the end of that green hose, there's a filter can.
There is a canister that we cut the bottom out to allow, you know, anything to go through it. The holes are roughly 1 inch. We opened them up to 2 inch to allow it. And that hose was sitting in a pocket of water, maybe 2 foot. You can see me walking by that area there, and I go from like maybe a foot of water to 2 foot of water right around that piling.
Right. So basically, it wasn't used to move sediment.
Just to wash.
Just to wash.
Strictly for washing.
Just to wash the sediment. Right. That 5 minute period of time where you were facing away the dock was strictly trying to figure out how to use the apparatus.
And to clear the line. I mean, as soon as we put it in there, you've got a 3 inch line that's 12 foot long. And if you do the math, you know, 1 foot of that hose is going to weigh about 7 pounds or 1 gallon of water. And every time you bring that, you know, column of water out, the hose gets heavy. So we didn't know how it was going to react as far as the weight of it, so we kept playing with it, wrapping it around until we got it up, you know, out of the settlement and could support the weight.
Now, a couple of the pictures show behind the boat lift that there is a depression. Now, I know that some of the depressions occur from the boat lift itself hitting the bottom, and while it's down in the bottom, washing back and forth moves some of the sediment. Was any of your time period of in the water aiding in the depression that was actually behind the boat lift?
No, the depression that's behind the boat is basically created by the scarab or the checkmate coming in and out, and the motors, you know, prop wash. The sailboat has also got a depression back in there. Mr. Garrett on the weekends on several occasions has taken the Boston Whaler, tied it to the sailboat on both cleats, and got the Boston Whaler trying to back up to pull that sailboat off his lift so he could go sailing. A futile attempt, you know, at low water.
So these depressions were from basically using the vessel, not
prop wash and drag and bottom
dredging type activity. Okay.
I just not to belabor the point, but if you looked at the second page, first paragraph on of the waterway report, you'll see an explanation as to your question.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Mr. Holland?
You worked a two-hour period, and you were trying to put the sediment around the poles. How many poles do you think you accomplished filling around the poles during that period of time?
Maybe that finger pier, attempts to do that finger pier. Because once you start, you can't see the bottom. It gets so muddy. But,
what
you
do
know,
you think? You did 10 poles, 8 poles?
Maybe 10 to 15 poles.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Thank Mr. Garrett, come forward. Just a reminder, you're under oath. Just a question for you.
Sure.
Yes.
Greg Garrett, 122 Sandbox Lane.
At any time during the course of this endeavor, did you direct anyone to attempt to increase the draft, the depth under those boats and the boat lift by use of a hydraulic pump?
No, sir.
What did you intend for the individuals to do while they were there with that pump?
There were piles of sediment outside of the shallow concave areas around the pilings. I would estimate some of those in diameter to be more like 6 or 8 feet even. I mean, they were pretty big. And then outside of those were piles of the material that used to be 10, 15, as much as 17 feet under, because those pilings were 30 to 40 feet in height or in length. And so to push those piles back into the holes as best they could of where they came out of.
Why did you find a need to have to do that?
Well, one, that's what Chris was doing, the dock builder was doing, and that's what he said it was supposed to be done. That's what he said he was going to come back and do. He also explained to me that the gravity had nothing to do with keeping pilings in. that it was the friction of the material against the pilings is what kept the pilings in. Now, these are vinyl-coated pilings. So, you know, Chris couldn't answer the question, but it seemed logical to me that with vinyl-coated pilings, there would even be less friction just because, you know, when you put lines around them, I mean, they're just completely slick. And so I didn't know what it would be like for sand, but I would think it'd be important to get the sand to cover as much of the piling as it possibly could. The other thing that happened is one time that, you know, Glenn was in the cove, he had an occasion to go in one of the holes, and he can tell you this, but I think he told me that one hole on the far side of the checkmate piling was almost 6 feet deep. I mean, he made Scott always wear life jackets. You know, I think it's kind of silly when it's 2 feet deep or 1 foot deep to wear a life jacket. But, I mean, with his background, he's very safety conscious. And, he's, you know, one time he actually went into one of the holes. You know, the last thing I want is to see a kid go down there. And you know, that again, that's an extreme example because they weren't that deep. But he said one of them was 6 feet deep.
Okay. Further questions? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several. Mr. Garrett, can you explain the scour holes, the depressions behind those two boat lifts that are in question?
Yeah. The Checkmate has two, you know, engines, inboard-outboard engines. Every boat that I have is either outboard or inboard-outboard engines. And so when, again, you know, attempt to do it as high of the tide as possible when getting the boats on and off, and then we, you know, if we're spending the weekend, we'll have the boats out in the York River. But getting the boats on and off, if the tide is not high enough, it might be with one boat, you know, half tide or three quarters tide, it might be another boat would be closer to the high tide. There's friction with the I-beams, you know, on the bottom, on that soft bottom, and they'll move. But when, you know, to put the boat up on the lift, it's like almost there, and you got to gun the engine to do that. In the case of the sailboat, that's actually not the sailboat lift. That's the lift that was designed. It's a 27,000-pound lift, and it's designed for a 20,000-pound boat. I have a boat that's 20,000 pounds with a dual diesel Volvo outdrives. And that's actually what that lift is designed for. But the times that I have, what Glenn was talking about, were the times that I've hooked up the Boston Whaler when I can't get that sailboat, that's what's been on it for most of the summer. When I can't get that sailboat off, it won't float off. I'll get the Boston Whaler and tie to the back two stern cleats of the sailboat and the two stern cleats of the Boston Whaler and gun the Boston Whaler to try to get the sailboat off. And I'm sure, as soft as that stuff is, even that little Boston Whaler motor is going to blow stuff all over the place.
And one more question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Garrett. Did the workers previously do any work in the bottom around the 31-foot cobia that is under that lift? And I guess one of the workers just stated that they had previously used the pump to wash down the pier. Was there any work done with the pumps where the hoses would have been overboard other than for the inlet hose to be overboard to wash?
No, I mean, they would have told me. They give me a report on what they do every day, and they would have told me they didn't do anything like that. On the cobia side, it's actually the deepest, because of that natural channel. Carl can show you, if you're interested, that, you know, the natural channel around the outside, and the cobia actually benefits from that natural channel and being outboards and being able to be trimmed up. I mean, that probably floats in about 18 inches of water. The reason the cobia, in some of those pictures you saw, the reason the cobia was over, like, on its side, on the outside of one of the finger piers, we went about 5 months, and I can't tell you exactly, but it's probably 5 months that we did not have the boat lifts working after the boat lifts were installed because of the electrical, not being able to get the electrical in there. We had a problem with two different, well, one electrical contractor and then another one. It's a friend of mine, he's actually a good friend of mine, that came back to do it, but he was doing it with his guys trying to do it on the side and save me some money, and it just took a long time. He ended up having to get Virginia Power to put a new line in, and that took a delay. It was about 5 or 6 months where we actually had lifts totally installed, but we could not use them because we didn't have power to them. We tried some temporary things, but they didn't work very well.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Mr. Daniel, been here a while. How about 2 minutes to wrap up if you you need that, sir. You can do that.
It won't take that long. Thank you for your time and attention. As I said at the onset, it's interesting, somewhat complicated, but you've heard facts. We think they are justified, and we would appreciate your favorable consideration of our comments.
Thank you, sir. Matters before the commission for discussion. No, sir. We're at the point now, gone through it. The case has been heard. Mr. McCluskey.
For the record, I can confirm in my personal experience and observation over many years on the water that that is the standard practice to wash poly in. Otherwise, you have to have a pile driver. And then they sit there, have to sit there for quite a bit of time, have the material naturally filled in. If it's sand, it does it much faster. But it is a friction that holds the pile. It's not point loaded, it's the friction that holds it down to keep it from loading. Not speaking about the dredging, just on the practice of installing pile.
Thank you for that insight. Questions, comments of the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think at issue, just to get back to one of the questions that the applicant's counsel posed to us, you know, what do we have here? And I have had the benefit of two site visits myself to this property to see what happened. And of interest, I guess, when I first heard that illegal dredging had occurred, I went out on a blown out winter tide in January, and I fully expected to see evidence of dredging, that is evidence of excavation. Last month we had a case that involved illegal dredging where an applicant had illegally dredged the channel using a workboat, and it was readily evident. I went out there expecting to see some evidence on a blown out tide, and I did notice the two scour holes behind the two boat lifts, but basically it's a mud flat, like the neighbor testified today. The sandbox is a large, very shallow mud flat with an encircling channel around the perimeter of the property. It appears to be a silty mud bottom, such that when the boat lifts are deployed, I think on virtually any tide except perhaps an unusually high tide, the boat lifts being deployed would be in that mud, and such that every time they're raised and lowered, they're going to bring up a little bit of mud with them. So I think the furrows underneath the boat lifts are explainable by that. We've heard explanation about what the scour holes are related to in terms of the just use of the boats, use of the boat lifts, et cetera. To get back to the question, what do we have here? I don't think we have a case where the applicant has sought to gain some sort of personal benefit or advantage by the work that was done. I think what we have on record suggests that it is standard practice for marine contractors, at least, to go back and try to fill in some of the conical depressions around a washed-in piling. That would have been better executed, of course, by the contractor himself had he done it in a timely manner. But if we give the applicant the benefit of the doubt that the work, at least, that was done around the pier was within the impact footprint contemplated by the NPN authorization for the project, and also was timely and prior to the expiration of the authorization by NPN, then it seems to me that work that was done in those areas is not a violation. That work that was done outside of those areas is basically what we see on the video, and I think that's basically reflective of some haphazard work, being done by people that may not have been familiar with the equipment. But I don't think that specific work was being done by the applicant in some way to gain advantage or to destroy state bottomland, et cetera. Looking at the bathymetric survey, having looked at the site myself, you can see in the photographs, this is a mud flat. You've got two scour holes behind the boats. I think those are explained by normal use of the boats. It's hard to see where there have been any measurable impacts from this.
Thank you. Further comments? Well, comes back to a number of different observations. And I guess sometimes having been a police officer before I got this job for 20-some years can prove to be a benefit up here. Sometimes it can prove to be a detriment. But I do know that what one person sees on one hand may not be what the other person sees on the other hand. Clearly the law states it shall be unlawful for any person to build, dump, trespass, or encroach upon, over, or take, use any materials from the beds, the bays, oceans, rivers, streams, creeks, without a permit. Well, that issue is mitigated by the explanation that is provided by counsel that they were under the presumption that the work that they were undertaking was part and parcel of that. Whether you buy that or not, I don't know, but it's a plausible excuse. The other consideration is, what do we see collectively as a commission as a result of this activity that was undertaken? And with Mr. Robbins, I tend to agree with you. I don't see at this juncture where the activity, the pumping, the disturbance, clearly it's a disturbance. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's a disturbance that, in all honesty, before anybody came or undertook it, should have come to the commission. But whether it's dredging to the point where a benefit was derived, I don't see that as well. Now let me get to the legal aspect of it as I see it. Arrests are based on probable cause. That is enough evidence to bring forth an investigation, maybe bring it forth to court. Conviction is based on, in certain cases, preponderance of evidence. In this case, if you get down to the bottom of it, it's a Class 1 misdemeanor, which raises the burden of proof to beyond a reasonable doubt. And I wish it hadn't happened. I really do. The issue about fences making good neighbors, I wish, and I can't cause that to occur, but I wish you well in that endeavor to both of you. But at the present time, I think the staff was perfectly correct in pursuing this, bringing it before the commission for review. I think the person that complained was well within his right to complain. That what he saw portended to him to be a violation of Virginia law, and he did the right and responsible thing by reporting it. But I just don't believe it rises to the level of a violation under the law.
Mr. Chairman, I can't say how I agree with what everybody said, so I would move that we dismiss a violation.
Is there a second to the motion? Second by Mr. McCluskey. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. We'll be in recess for lunch now until 1:20. God.